You're listening to Eureka on Monocle 24, brought to you by the team behind The Entrepreneurs. Diego Berti and Paul Felek are co-founders of Berta Felek, a Toronto-based interior design studio behind some of Canada's most iconic and innovative retail outposts. What started as two business partners in 1993 in a 500-square-foot studio is now a company of 30 strong, with global projects across retail, residential development, and hospitality. Amidst a recession in the early 90s, the partners launched their studio and quickly began working with major retailer Club Monaco, before adding luxury department store Holt Renfrew to their portfolio. They've gone on to work with clients such as the W Hotel, Brown Thomas, Nike, and Canadian book retailer Indigo. Here's Diego and Paul now with more on brand engagement, the importance of physical space in today's retail landscape, and the story of Berta Felek.
Well, it was an interesting time. It was, 1993, and we were in the midst of a recession, and we were, working for a couple of years already and thought it would probably be a good time to start something. There was nothing to lose because there was nothing to be gained at that point economically. And so we thought, what the hell, let's go for it kind of thing. And it was a little bit of naivete that pushed us forward, but very serendipitously things started to fall into place for us, and it was it still is an amazing journey to this day. A lot of things were changing in the country at that point. And as previously we were just talking about how the industry has changed. Back then, there weren't a lot of canvases to play on. And some of the canvases 25 years ago was the retail canvas, and there was a lot happening 25 years ago in the retail world. And, the form of design, the animation of retail was really a key component of what could happen. And we had a couple of opportunities and started working with a couple of small retailers. But one of our bigger breaks was Club Monaco, because they were looking for a new designer at the time. And I remember so distinctly, I think, again, going back to our youth, Club Monaco, even to this day, is still an amazing brand. But back then was a very large key player in the North American market, and also on a global point of view. Everybody knew who they were. So we understood and recognized the importance of such a brand. And I remember going to the meeting thinking this would be a great opportunity because, 15 years from now, when we get this opportunity again, we'll know how to handle it. Unbeknownst to us, we got it kind of thing. And I remember when we got it, they said, you only will be working on the Canadian stores. You won't be doing anything in the U.S. And within 3 months, we had our first store in the U.S. on Prince Street. And it just started to take off. There was a lot of different things that happened after that. We got a couple of other retail commissions, and then all of a sudden, now I think this is year 7 in our business, and we received kind of like what I guess I would call a cattle call letter from Holt Renfrew asking us to compete for the design of the flagship in Toronto, and really basically for the country. And I remember thinking, why us? Because, we didn't have enough retail in our portfolio. And most definitely at this level, this is like the pinnacle of luxury on a global stage. And we quickly realized they probably didn't have enough Canadian content as far as the people that were competing at the time. So we were definitely the underdog. And I remember competing and going to this meeting and seeing a lot of very interesting people that we've always admired on a global point of view in the reception area kind of thing. And going into the meeting, and we were the first to meet and met all the key players. And it was a really great meeting, and left that day thinking, again, what a great experience. We'll know what to do 15 years from now. That was 9 o'clock in the morning. 3 o'clock that afternoon, I went for a late lunch, came back to the office, and the office was just abuzz. And it was my receptionist at the time that said, "Hey, where have you been? We've been looking for you. You just were awarded Holt Renfrew." And that was really, truly the beginning of our retail career on a global stage. After that was built, it brought a lot of notoriety to the company. And we just got catapulted all over the world after that one commission kind of thing.
So I think in the early days with both Club Monaco and with Holt Renfrew, I think that a lot of people ask us why we do so much work in the retail category. One, I think it's that retail kind of found us and gave us these wonderful opportunities. So we just continue to pursue in that category. But those categories have also, the retail category has also brought recognition to the development category and to the hospitality category. And, you know, because of the storytelling that we do with various brands, other categories take note and want to bring our point of view into those other categories to hopefully get a fresh perspective and a fresh point of view. So it's naturally expanded our business into other areas.
What we're doing in the studio is we're trying to always look for, or not, I should say, have a missed opportunity, and we're looking for originality on a constant basis, you know. And what we're doing is forever editing, and we've always been doing that from day one. And I think that is probably one of the key factors that have helped us survive, because we're always editing ourselves and editing what's happening on a global point of view. And when we're designing, we're not designing and looking at a piece as far as how it sits, let's say, i.e. in Toronto, but more importantly, how does it sit on the global stage? That's what we're really looking at all the time, and we've always had that philosophy from day one. I think that's what's pulled us not only around the world, but it has kept our longevity going.
Having a business partner has been a great sounding board. It's also allowed us to, I think, not just, you referred to like a sole proprietorship. So I think sometimes those businesses can become very one-dimensional. And I think that naturally with the two of us, there certainly is a divide in terms of the day-to-day roles. But, you know, there's a big swath of middle ground here that we both need each other to make decisions on, and then we both make decisions collectively. And over the years, there's been very few times that we've actually been apart on a decision, but ultimately, at the end of the day, we always find the common ground. And it allows us to concentrate on different parts and aspects of the business. And, you know, Jago needs the freedom to work on the projects. I don't think anybody really understands the amount of time and effort and consideration that goes into every, be it the macro details or the micro details. But you also need time. You know, I think part of the reason we've survived for 25 years is somebody has their eye on the business every day, the same way that there's somebody with their eye on the design details every day. And those two things naturally complement one another.
We've been working with Indigo and Miss Reisman for 15 years on and off kind of thing. And when we first started working with Heather, Indigo was definitely a bookstore. And just like any successful retailer, you have to kind of ebb and flow with the times and understand how to survive and what are the wants and needs that the public are looking for. And I think that very smartly, they have cross-pollinated not only books in the bookstore, they are still, for the record, primarily a bookstore. But now, you know, they, and I think it's genius, they now have branded themselves as a cultural department store.
Today, the path to retail, when we first started, there was no internet, there was no digital content. So naturally, retailers built brick-and-mortar stores first, and then along came the internet, and it became a complement to the retail spaces. But I think that what we're experiencing today is that we have a lot of new retailers who are really e-tailers because they're selling all of their goods online and have now come to us to realize that a screen is a screen. It becomes pretty one-dimensional. It lacks emotion. There's a number of things that make it sexy in terms of convenience, but it also can become very, again, one-dimensional. You can swipe away a brand and forget about a brand. But when you're in a physical environment, that creates an emotional connection with the end user. And I think that's where we see retail heading today, and it's more about a user experience.
There is now a lot of gray matter. You know, again, let's go back 25 years ago, retail design was retail design, hospitality design was hospitality design, and so on and so forth. Now, the lines have been blurred, right? And, you know, now you're looking at society and culture on a global point of view that is very design aware, that is all about the experience. We can talk about brands like W Hotel or Four Seasons or Shangri-La, and then you can go to like any of the major retailers and you can look at them in certain ways. And now what they're all seeing on both ends of the spectrum, from hospitality to retail and vice versa, is that they need to be a little bit of everything in order to create or capture the public's interest. And so a lot has changed in the retail world. It's not just enough to have the functionality of the retail. There has to be another reason to stay in the environment. And so that's making it a lot more sexier, a lot more interesting, a lot more fun to design, right? Because the canvas has now become that much more larger. And vice versa, now that has also empowered us, enabled us to have more success in the hospitality world and look at it in a different way, or in the development world in a different way, right? Because you're really now designing for the experience. Really, at the end, that's what you're really, really doing. We don't talk about design as far as categories anymore. We talk about the experience that we're creating for you. And serendipitously, the function behind the experience is what we're trying to drive forward. But first and foremost, it is the experience that we're trying to create, that aha moment, you know, that point of view that you're going to have, that point of memory that you're going to remember. It doesn't matter what we're selling at the end of the day. Observing this for the past 25 years, the most successful people are the most focused, right? You can't take a 7-Eleven approach to everything, right? Can't be everything to everybody, right? You need to be focused. And I think the public, they're looking for something more purposeful that has a little bit more meaning behind what is being offered, but they're looking for originality. And they're also looking for evolution. Right. And I think that's the other thing with a lot of entrepreneurs. We've seen a lot of what I would call one-shot wonders, where they have the one great idea, but they don't evolve. And I think it's important to always be questioning yourself all the time. And like, what else is there out there? And how can we improve on this? And be strong enough to let go of something and know when it's done and move forward.
I think we've been pretty strategic in terms of how we've grown our business. I think that's also part of our success, that Diego and I are certainly risk takers when it comes to design and really pushing the envelope on creating unique, interesting, you know, concepts for other brands and clients. But I think, you know, ourselves coming from entrepreneurial backgrounds, we watched our parents grow different types of businesses and be very successful with them. And I think that's naturally rubbed off on us. And I think our strategy for growth has been something that's been very digestible and somewhat strategic. I think that we're not about quantity, we're about quality for sure. So the studio, for the amount of work that we do produce annually, I think the studio is actually a pretty lean group, and we're pretty selective about who we bring on board. There's also some people with us that have been with us for a number of years, and they become integral to the business. So it's been a really interesting ride. It's been a really great group of people. We certainly cannot, you know, in the beginning, yes, it was just the two of us, but between us, we only have four hands. So, you know, naturally you need to grow and allow people to take on other parts of the role and help support our push to grow the business. But I think through all of that, we've always maintained a level of quality to our projects and to the work that we've actually executed. So even when we've been through a growth period, you know, it's always about the quality.
Thank you very much to Paul Felick and Diego Berti for sharing the story of Berta Felick. Thank you as well to Will Kitchens in our Toronto Bureau for conducting the interview. The show was mixed and edited by Alex Port Felix. I'm Daniel Bache. Thank you so much for listening, and goodbye.